Want to buy an elephant? Well, that's the product. A real live Asian elephant standing 9 feet tall with a 4.5 foot long trunk and weighing 10,860 pounds. In this illustration, the salesperson is going out and making sales presentations to farmers. Let's listen closely as he begins his first one. Yes, sir, it's a wonderful elephant. Very durable. A practical gray color. Very sturdy construction. And economical to operate. It runs on peanuts. Well, no thank you, the prospect replies. I mean, what would I do with it? Our salesman friend is not discouraged. He heads down the road and finds prospect number two, and we listen in again. Yes, sir, it's a wonderful elephant. Very durable. Comes in a practical gray color. Sturdy construction. Economical to operate. Runs on peanuts. Trained by Mohammed, the world's greatest elephant trainer. And our company is the largest and most respected elephant supplier in the world. And we have parts and service branches everywhere. Well, the second farmer says, well, son, I'll tell you, if I ever need an elephant, I'd like to get that one from you, but I sure don't need one. What's happening here? The salesman seems well prepared, knowledgeable about his product, and in each case he's gotten the farmer's attention. Have you sometimes received extremely positive feedback from a prospect who still ended up not investing in your product? So let's listen in on the third presentation. Well, sir, it's a wonderful elephant, very durable, comes in a practical gray color, sturdy construction, very economical to operate, trained by Mohammed, the greatest elephant trainer. Our company is the largest and most respected elephant supplier in the world, parts and service branches everywhere. And I've reduced the price in half just for you. And we have easy budget terms. And the third prospect responds, well, it sure sounds like a great bargain. I just wish I knew someone who wanted an elephant. Well, you know the problem, don't you? But does our friend, the elephant salesperson? Is it possible to get so caught up in our wonderful products that we sometimes overlook a vital selling step? Selling is a science, and to succeed at it, it's best to follow all of the steps. Now let's listen to another salesperson. This one is a true professional, a top 1% club member, a conscious, unconscious competent, who knows as much about selling elephants as Willie Cooley did about providing taxi service. He's talking to his prospect, another farmer in the same community, and he's already made his approach, and he's certainly captured the farmer's attention. He's got his elephant. Would it be okay, Mr. Farmer, if I asked you a few simple questions? Well, sure. What do you want to know about, young man? What type of problems, Mr. Farmer, do you have on a farm this size? Oh, no problems. Just not enough time for the work I got to get done around here. I mean, it's just work, work, work. Who helps you with all this work, Mr. Farmer? Well, my 5 kids, but sometimes the work's too heavy for them. Well, what about your time, Mr. Farmer? Where is it spent? 2 places. Here on my farm and down at our county Republican Party headquarters. That's where it's spent. They got me so involved in county politics now that they even want me to run for office. Well, it sounds like I came on a good day. You see, this elephant is specially trained to do heavy farm work, and it would save you and your family lots of time. Here, watch what he can do. Then after demonstrating, the salesperson says, and this elephant will do the work of 9 horses. You see his trunk? His trunk will lift over 600 pounds of anything you've got on your farm. And he can push or pull over 3,500 pounds. Yet he is so gentle, he can pick up a tiny quail egg without cracking it. Here, watch him with this egg. That's amazing, isn't it? Gosh, says the farmer, looks like his trunk is a giant hand. Yes, it is, says our salesperson. And another thing that you're going to like is he's trained to play with kids, as well as do work here on your farm. You know, all 5 of your children could ride him and have lots of fun. Look at this picture with an entire school class on his back. Your kids would have a ball with him, wouldn't they? Gosh, sure enough. You know, they could even charge admission to their friends for rides around our farm. You're right. And I know you already thought of this, but just picture this crowd puller at your next Republican rally. Okay, stop. I'll take him, the farmer cries. Now, what happened in this selling presentation? What did the professional do differently? He qualified his prospect using a funnel presentation and then built units of conviction to meet the farmer's specific needs. How good are you at using qualifying questions and building powerful units of conviction? On this message, we'll review a few basic, vital concepts that even experienced professionals sometimes forget to use. Why is that? Almost every salesperson knows you've got to qualify, that you've got to ask questions, and then listen to the answers, and that when you describe your product, it's benefits you sell, not features. Why would somebody not qualify with a funnel presentation? Because we all forget. We get off track. Like the good golfer who's off his game. When he goes for help, he's not usually taught anything new by the golf pro. He's just reminded of what he already knows, but he's not doing. That's one of the greatest values of a coach, to remind us of what we know, but have forgotten to use. Your sales manager can help you. Ask him or her for help. Now, maybe you feel you're a better salesperson than he or she is, and maybe you are. But so what? The Olympic swimming champion Mark Spitz, winner of 9 Olympic gold medals, was coached by Sherm Shavoy, a man who couldn't even swim. Mr. Shavoy, by the way, during his long coaching career, had over 50 world record holders in his stable of swimmers, and he couldn't swim. So why not think of me as one of your coaches? My goal is to help you get more out of you with these reminders and suggestions. In addition to the ideas you're going to be hearing on this message, one of the great coaching experiences is field training. Now, based on how your organization is set up, you might already have a regular time when your sales manager or your training manager goes out with you and observes you making sales calls. This, of course, is a wonderful way to get feedback from a coach. Now, here's a twist on this conventional type of field training. You become the trainer. Set up a day to go out with another sales pro of similar experience and selling skills. The goal, however, isn't only to help the other person improve their selling. It's to help you improve yours. Here's what can happen, and I know from firsthand experience of over 3 decades of doing this. When you go out with one of your associates, another salesperson, calling on their prospects, selling the same product you sell, you'll be like someone in a helicopter, hovering above the selling presentation, just watching and listening. You'll see the sales presentation unfold, as if you're watching a movie on a big screen. And what you'll soon notice is that your associate is missing some important things, some tells, as Johnny Chan calls them. You'll start hearing things and seeing things that will astound you, blow you away, and even get you frustrated. You'll hear investing signals from the prospect saying, "I want to buy, I want to buy," and yet your associate isn't picking up on them. I mean, how could that be? As amazing as the mind is, it can only think of one thing at one time. Sure, it can do it super fast, but if your associate is thinking about what to say or do next, they aren't listening, at least not listening as fully and as focused as you are. So often, when going on sales calls with one of my client's salespeople, I see and hear things from the prospect that the salesperson just doesn't pick up on. In one case, after a very good sales call for a lift truck company, the sales rep and I discussed what we thought was the prospect's major concern or need. The sales rep named some things that I hadn't even heard the prospect bring up. And when I told him I thought the prospect's hot button was the tires, the sales rep said, "What does that have to do with anything?" Tactfully and carefully, I repeated what the prospect had said about how often he had to replace his existing lift truck's tires, and how the yard was full of objects that just tore up the tires. It was so obvious that the sales rep, an excellent salesperson, just didn't hear that. Well, maybe he heard it, but he didn't interpret it as a need, and in this case, it was a big need. Was I so smart, so perceptive, so skilled in the art of selling? No. All I was doing was hovering overhead in an invisible silent helicopter, watching and listening to everything going on. I knew nothing about the product, the prospect, his needs and wants, nothing. So I just focused on them and saw and heard so much more. Now you do that. You team up with someone and watch your associates selling what you sell and see how much you pick up that they miss. Now why would you do that? Just to prove to yourself beyond a shadow of a doubt that when you are so well prepared and you know your product so well that you're a conscious, unconscious competent and that you'll actually get outside of yourself. It's like what they call in the realm of the supernatural an out-of-body experience. Well, of course, you don't actually leave your body and start floating around the room on a sales call. Yet it's almost like that. You're watching you and you're watching them, like a third-party observer. And oh, what a great feeling to know exactly what to say and what to do, and then do it. So let's review some basics on how to qualify. As a professional salesperson, you know that one of the most vital building blocks in the entire sales presentation is qualifying your prospect. Because before you can provide a solution, you need to obtain the information by asking questions, listening to the answers, and then writing down those answers so you don't forget them. And here's where the funnel comes in. A funnel presentation is a series of carefully designed questions written out on a checklist to help you find out your prospect's needs, desires, and problems. When you know the answers to these questions, you can then present your product as a means of meeting those needs, fulfilling those desires, and solving those problems. Now keep these thoughts in mind when it comes to qualifying. I wrote down five of them for you. Number one, when you're telling, you're not selling. Number two, the prospect doesn't care how much you know until he knows how much you care. Number three, questions show that you want to help. Number four, questions enable the prospect to see his or her own situation more clearly. And number five, the best qualifiers are the best closers. As my friend and well-known speaker Tony Alessandro says, selling is like being a doctor. Prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. It's so true. The most important building block and one of the most overlooked is qualifying. And as nearly every top-selling professional will say, it's almost impossible to build a meaningful, solution-oriented, problem-solving sales presentation without qualifying your prospect first. But before you start asking your qualifying questions, it's good to ask permission. You might use something like this. Would it be okay if I asked you a few questions, Mr. Prospect? And it's a good idea to know your questions in advance. Use a checklist. I mean, I don't know of any prospect who would be insulted by a salesperson referring to some type of printed material. You should know what's on the list, but having a list in front of you will prevent you from forgetting anything. Now, have you ever noticed those silver-haired commercial airline pilots, what they do before they take a jet plane up in the sky? They refer to a checklist. They wouldn't think of starting those engines without checking things out first and then checking them off that list. You know why? Hundreds of lives depend on it. And your livelihood depends on your selling success. So use a checklist. Now, when you structure your qualifying questions, make sure the prospect can answer them easily. And if he or she isn't able to answer them, restructure them and make them easier. Here's an example of what I mean. Mr. Prospect, how often would your production people use it? I don't know. I have no idea. Well, if that's the response, then it wasn't an easy question. So quickly restructure it by saying something like this. Well, would you think they'd use it every day, twice a week, or just once a week? Make it easy for your prospects to answer your questions. Now, before you begin your list of questions, you must know the answers you want. Once you've identified what you want, it's fairly easy to structure the right questions. Okay, here are some things that you probably need to know. And again, I jotted them down for you, so let me read them to you quickly. Does your prospect have a need? Does he feel desire and urgency? Does she have the money? Is she a decisive type person? Is he honest, trusting, willing to listen? Is he a referral? Has she seen your ads? Does he know about your product? Does she provide feedback to salespeople? Is he intelligent, a good thinker? Is he friendly? Is she able to make a decision? Do they have the authority? Now, do these sound familiar? Well, they should. These are the qualities of the ideal prospect which we identified as part of your 10-to-win rating system. Of course, by now, you should have come up with your own 10 qualities. So incorporate each of them into your qualifying questions, your funnel presentation. You know, this funnel idea is so helpful. Visualize an actual funnel. We'll make it silver in color, let's say about 12 inches high and about 10 inches in diameter at the wide top opening. Now, see how it narrows down to the small spout at the bottom? It's only 1 inch in diameter there. Now, the purpose of this funnel is to reduce a large volume of material into a small area. That's exactly what a professional qualifying funnel presentation does. It reduces a prospect's total situation to a very small or specific problem, which your product will solve. Now back to your 10-to-win list of those qualities. Here are some of the qualifying questions you can adapt to your own selling situation and include on your checklist. Let's say in regard to money, you could ask questions like this. And again, let me read them to you. About how much had you planned to invest? What budget guidelines have you established? How important are the dollars and cents in this situation? Now, when it comes to time or urgency, you could ask questions like this. When do you think you need to take action on this? What's our time frame in this situation? Or how important is time to you in solving this problem? Do you have your questions prepared that will give you all the information you need? Well, if you do, that's good. Next, watch out that you don't answer your own question. Avoid saying something like this. Well, you can decide on this, can't you, Mr. Prospect? I mean, it's so much better to say, who usually makes these decisions? Avoid saying, I'm sure you can use this, right? Instead, say, how would you use this? So avoid answering your own questions. And then, after you ask the question, wait. Give your prospect time to respond. As you know, people are all different. And because of these differences, some prospects need more time to think before they respond. Others might answer your question before you finish asking it. So how do you respond? Quickly or slowly? As you've been listening to this message, have you been mentally running ahead of me, anticipating my next point? Or are you stopping occasionally, thinking carefully about what's being said? Remember what we said before. To sell John Smith what John Smith buys, you must see through John Smith's eyes. For the prospects who like to ponder, slow down your questions. And then pause longer. With prospects who move quickly and jump ahead of you, shorten your questions. Be brief and specific. In either case, whenever you ask a question, wait for a reply. If you don't get one, then do one of two things. Either restate the question or reword the question, but avoid answering it yourself. As you know, there are different types of questions you can use. There are the open questions and the closed questions. Which ones do you think salespeople use most often? Yes, they use the closed ones because they're the easy ones. All they require is a yes or no response. If you want information, though, closed questions don't usually give it to you. Here are some words that closed questions begin with. Here are 16. Let me read them to you. Are, can, could, couldn't. Do, don't, doesn't. Has, have, haven't. Is, isn't. Shall, will, would, and wouldn't. Now, for example, do you like this? No. Would you want it? No. Can you see how it would fit in? No. I mean, if you want information, you've got to ask the open questions. And the open questions begin with words like who, what, when, where, how, why, and which. Six W's and one H. Let me say them again slowly. Who, what, when, where, how, why, and which. Now, for example, what do you like best about asking open questions? Well, they help me find out about each prospect's unique situation. How much more effective is that than do you like open questions? Yep. I mean, no doubt about it. Open questions, based on their very nature, give you lots more information and require your prospect to respond with more than just a yes or a no. A client related this story from his days in the Army. It seems a young psychology student who enlisted in the Army had a theory that how you phrased a question was the key to the type of answer that you'd get, and that a positively phrased, open question would get you much more positive results than a negatively phrased, closed question. But he never realized how much difference there could be. So one day, working in the commissary, he was serving apricots on the chow line. Now, not the favorite food of most GIs. So for about the first 15 minutes, he said, spoon in hand, you don't want any apricots, do you? And he kept score. After 100 GIs, 91% said no. No to the apricots. Next, he switched for about another 15 minutes or 100 more GIs and said, you do want some apricots, don't you? And using a positive close question, he got 48% to say, okay. Then this great sales professional-to-be said to the next 100 GIs, those going through the chow line, would you like one dish of apricots or two? And in spite of the fact that most still didn't like apricots, over 40% took two dishes and another 53% took one dish. Over 90% selling rate by just changing his question. Now, most likely you're not selling apricots on a chow line, but you still need to work at restructuring your questions. Let's focus now on using effective questions to gain the information you need about your prospects, their needs, and their wants. Now, here's one very powerful closed question that gives you almost the same effect as an open question. I call it the Lou Wright Power Question, in honor of the man who taught it to me. Lou Wright was one of the most successful and also one of the nicest people I've ever known. He began his sales career in the insurance business, went on to become president of a major home building firm, and in his later years was an executive in the banking industry, a very varied career. Now, we had known each other for many years through our church, and he had hired me to speak for his salespeople on a few occasions. One day, by chance, we had found ourselves sitting next to each other on an airplane. Soon the discussion turned to business, and it was at this point I felt I could ask Lou my favorite question of highly successful people. So I said, "Lou, what was one of the most important things you learned about selling in your long and successful selling career?" Now just stop for a minute and think. What would happen in your career if you asked successful people that you know that very question? You'd learn a lot. So after giving it some thought, Lou Wright said to me, "I guess," he said, "it was learning how to find out things about my customer or my prospect or even one of my employees that most people never got to know about. I called it hidden or buried information, and in many cases, the person wasn't consciously aware of it themselves. And if they were aware of it, this information just usually didn't get divulged to the ordinary salesperson. But I developed the simple question to get it. The key, though, is to ask the same question three times. Plus," he said, "it's a closed question." Well, now he had me confused. I mean, how could a closed question be so powerful that a man like Lou Wright would rate it as one of his best selling techniques? He then said, "Oh, yes, and it's just four words asked three times." I mean, I could hardly contain myself. What was it? Lou smiled at me and quietly said, "Is there anything else?" That's it, I thought. It didn't sound very revolutionary to me. Didn't even sound very impacting until Lou explained how to use it. So here's how you can use and profit from Lou Wright's Power Question. When you're in a selling situation where you've already found a need, developed some rapport, asked a lot of questions, and have already gotten a lot of good information, you then use Lou's technique. Here, let me role play it with you. The prospect, Mrs. Jovanopoulos, is the owner of a manufacturing company. One of the salespeople, Fred, is with a commercial roofing manufacturer, and the other salesperson, Tony, is a commercial roofing contractor salesperson. They often make sales calls together. The lead salesperson, the salesperson for the manufacturer, says to the owner, "I see Mrs. Jovanopoulos." Hey, don't you hate it when sales trainers and consultants call almost all their make-believe prospects Mr. or Mrs. Smith or Jones? Hey, let's be creative here. Let's be real world. Okay, Mrs. Jovanopoulos, before we prepare a proposal for you on that re-roofing of your plant, is there anything else we should know about your business? "Well," she says, "you know, June and July are our two busiest months, so we can't have any interference there, and September and October are our two slowest months." "Okay," Fred says. "In addition to your busy and slow months, is there anything else?" Now, that's the second time he's asked Lou Wright's Power Question. And Mrs. Jovanopoulos thinks for a minute and then says, "Well, you know, we've been threatened by the union with a strike. If we don't resolve some issues within the next 30 days, they could shut us down, and that would be disastrous with our busiest 2 months coming up soon." Well, now Fred and Tony have gotten some very important information, new information, which had never come up in their basic presentation. So they ask one more time, "Is there anything else?" But notice how it's worked in by rephrasing what they've already learned from the first two "Is there anything else?" questions. "I see, Mrs. Jovanopoulos. In addition to your busy and slow months and the union situation, is there anything else we should be aware of?" "Well," she says, "you know, this is very confidential, but with all the challenges I'm facing right now, with the union and my biggest two customers threatening to sign up with my major competitor, I may be selling the company." Wow! Where did that come from? From the powerful, deeply probing impact of "Is there anything else?" asked three times. You see, people don't usually tell you everything right away. And that applies to your prospects, your associates, and even in your own family. Take this situation, for example, which a seminar attendee shared with me after he heard me describe how to use "Is there anything else?" three times. His 19-year-old son borrowed his car one night to go to a party, and at breakfast the next morning, he said this discussion took place. "So, son, how was the party last night?" "Oh, well, the party was great, Dad, and I went to a bar afterwards." Oh, I see. Is there anything else that happened? Well, I didn't drink anything. Well, that's good, son, since you were driving. Is there anything else? Well, I got home before 1 o'clock. Well, I'm glad about that. Son, is there anything else that you'd like to tell me about last night?
Well, Dad, I wrecked your car.
Now, if you've got children, you know that the first thing out of their mouth isn't usually what they did wrong. Sometimes you got to pry it out of them. And the same with your prospects. You've got to pry it out of them. So give it a shot. Use "is there anything else" 3 times. Now, are you ready for a challenge? A real challenge. A fun but not easy one. Team up with another salesperson, preferably from your own organization, and begin asking each other open questions. See how long you can talk without asking a closed question. We did this at a sales seminar I was conducting in Sun Valley, Idaho, for a major Fortune 500 company. The 224 sales professionals paired off, but what happened next shocked them and me. Hard as they tried, they couldn't limit themselves to open questions. They said, "Hey, this stuff is tough. I never realized how many closed questions I use." When you do this exercise, be careful not to repeat the other person's question. Yeah, let me show you what I mean. For example, how do you feel? Well, gee, I feel fine. How do you feel? No, don't do that. Do it this way instead. How do you feel? Well, gee, I feel fine. Hey, what are you doing this afternoon? Well, let's see. I'm going riding and I'm going to do some swimming. Oh, have you been to the tennis courts yet? No. Well, closed question. Did you catch it? Have you been to the tennis courts? Elicits a yes or no reply. Now, continue like this and count how many open questions you can use. How many do you think our Sun Valley friends used? 14. And that was the winning team. But you know, with practice, every group got up over 30. You too can improve with practice. Just make sure it's perfect practice. You see, practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. Only perfect practice makes perfect. You know, that's why NFL coaches video their practices, so they're done right. Another type of question you might consider using is an open probing question. It can be used throughout your presentation, and it'll help you get even more detailed information about your prospect. Here are a few that you can adapt to your own situation, and let me read them to you again. What makes that so critical to you right now, Mrs. Prospect? Where did you hear that that was a problem? How disappointed would you be if you didn't get all of those, Mr. Prospect? What if we could find a way? What would be your reaction to this? You know, and one of the most powerful probes of all, just to clarify my thinking, could I ask you why? That's right, why. Like a young child who doesn't know, you can ask why whenever you're unsure. Okay, quick review on qualifying questions. Ask permission, know the questions in advance, have a checklist, make the questions easy, know the answer you want, be careful not to answer your own questions, choose the right type of questions, either open or closed, and remember Willie Cooley's qualifying questions? They got the information he needed. Where are you going, Mr. Weldon? Have you ever been to Memphis? How many children do you have? How old are they? And are these your bags? And finally, listen, just like Willie Cooley listened. Now that you've gone through all of this effort, wouldn't it be a shame to ask all the right questions, but be so busy thinking of your next question that you don't hear your prospect's responses? That's why you need your presentation to be planned. When you have a planned presentation, you can focus your full attention on your prospect. You can hear what they're really saying, read between the lines, and watch their nonverbal responses, just like poker player pro Johnny Chan. The amateur salesperson is so busy thinking of his questions that he often misses all of this. Now, let me tell you another personal experience I had way back in 1975. I was still pretty inexperienced in the ways of the world, but remember what we said about consumer conditioning. Well, I was already one of those conditioned consumers. I had been purchasing a new car every 2 years, and each time I was disappointed and disillusioned with the treatment I received. I mean, I had completely given up on car service. There was no such thing as far as I was concerned. They sell you and then they forget you, I thought. Have you ever had that kind of problem with a product? I mean, you buy it and then nobody seems to care. Well, I decided I had the answer now. I wasn't going to look for service. I was going to buy price, and I was just going to lease a car. So I got the names of the 5 best leasing companies in the Phoenix area. I wrote them down. Then I identified the car I wanted to lease. I picked out all the extras, wrote them down, and I made 5 copies of the list showing exactly what I wanted. Now you come back with me in time. Together, come on. Let's approach the receptionist at the first leasing company. I want to talk to your best salesperson, I say. A fellow comes out and he says, yeah, what can I do for you, friend?
I say, well, I just want to lease this car. What's it going to cost me a month? And he says, well, let me tell you about... I said, listen, no, I just want to know what it's going to cost me a month. Have prospects ever come over in a defensive way like that to you? Could it be that they've been hurt? They've been soured by their experience with poor salespeople, and now they're negative, closed, defensive, and mistrusting. Well, that's how I was about cars. Negative, and I admit it. Well, this salesperson is caught off guard. He doesn't know what to do other than give me the price. So he goes into his office, does some figuring, comes out with a price. I write it down next to his name on my list and say, thanks very much, and I leave. And I go to the next leasing company and the next, and I do exactly the same thing. You know, it's interesting. In the first four companies I went to, nobody even got my name. Nobody did anything but give me the price. You know why? I had a better presentation than they did. I was more prepared. I was more equipped. And they didn't know what to do or what to say. They just gave me the price. Now remember, without preparation and perfect practice, you and your prospect could both lose. One person who certainly knew the importance of preparation was the famous Green Bay Packers football coach, Vince Lombardi. He was quoted as saying that he could give an opposing coach his playbook and even reveal the sequence of the plays he would run, and his team still couldn't be stopped. You see, Lombardi knew his team would execute perfectly because they had practiced perfectly. They were prepared. Are you that prepared? Now, back to our visit with the fifth and final leasing company. I walk in, I say to the receptionist, I want to see somebody about leasing a car. She said, Mr. Richards is the one you need to speak to. I said, well, is he in? She said, yes, let me show you into his office. I walk in, and Mr. Richards greets me with a smile and asks my name and what brought me in. He's quite a bit older than the other leasing people that I had met, and he had a quiet air about him, confident, relaxed, warm, and very friendly. Handing him my sheet of paper, I said, I just want to lease this exact car, and I just want to know what it's going to cost me a month. He then looks at me and he says, Mr. Weldon, we don't lease cars, we don't sell cars, and we don't rent cars. Well, now I'm confused. I mean, I don't understand. The sign outside your building says Richards Auto Leasing Company. He then goes on to explain, Mr. Weldon, we're in the transportation business. We help people get to where they want to go. He then asked me what kind of car I was driving, how many miles a year I put on it, what kind of work I did. I tell him. He then says, without getting too personal, Mr. Weldon, what income range are you in? And I tell him. He writes it all down, pauses for a minute, looks up at me and says, you know, Mr. Weldon, I think you qualify to lease a car from us. I said, I do? He said, yes. All we need to do is take care of the paperwork. He then picks up my list, writes it all down on his leasing agreement. He puts his name at the bottom, turns it around, and he says, all you need to do is okay it here. I said, what about the price? He said, is that really the most important thing to you? I say, well, no, not really. What is, Mr. Weldon? I say, well, you know, I've just given up on waiting at automobile dealerships for repairs, service, and maintenance. I mean, because nobody ever seems to be interested in taking care of me. Mr. Richards says, I understand, Mr. Weldon. How would you feel if you didn't have to do any of that? If we took care of all the waiting, the repairs, and the maintenance. When you need service, you bring the car to us, and we give you a free loaner. You're kidding, I said. No, he said, that's how we help people. Remember, we're in the transportation business. Immediately, I reached forward and said, give me that pen. Well, not only did I lease that car from him, but 2 years later, I leased another car, plus a second one for our family. I was sold on Mr. Richards. He was a professional, and he did exactly what he promised to do, plus a little extra. And by the way, have you noticed what I'm doing right now? I'm recommending him. I'm recommending him to you. And isn't it what you'd like to have happen with your customers? Well, it will when you're of such service to your customers that they'll tell everybody about you. When Mr. Richards retired some years ago, he had hundreds of thrilled and loyal customers because he was truly a great sales professional. You know, it's amazing how easily he made that first leasing sale on me and helped me improve my whole attitude towards automobile salespeople. As the years went by, Mr. Richards and I had lots of talks, some about my transportation needs and others about thinking like a customer, TLC. And during one of our visits, he told me that when I came in that first time shopping him, I really didn't have a chance. Smiling, he went on to say that as a student of people, he had seen my type so many times before, and he knew exactly what to do and how to do it. Mr. Richards explained his selling strategy to me. First, make a positive impression. Don't act like a typical salesman. Second, take control of the discussion by switching my point of reference. Third, find out everything he could about me as fast as he could. Fourth, get my business that day
and at least one other car in the next 2 years. As I sat in his office at the corner of 7th Street and Indian School Road, with my mouth wide open, I, the sales trainer and the sales student, was at the feet of a master, a top 1% club member. Well, we discussed his four-step plan, and yes, I said he did make a positive impression on me. No push, no shove, no slap on the back. I mean, he acted more like an accountant than a salesman. And yes, he took instant control when he got me off my prepared presentation. He used "we're in the transportation business" approach, and boy, that completely switched my frame of reference. His qualifying questions were asked so casually, so chatty and informally, not like a third degree. And they were such precise, specific, and insightful questions, giving him all the information that he needed. Hey, do you use specific, precise, and insightful questions? Let's just say you're in a restaurant. The server comes over to you and might say, "Hi, what can I get you for lunch?" Now, that's a good question. But then it just completely falls apart. You say, "I want a hamburger." Then they say, "Well, how would you like it cooked?" "Well done." "Okay, what kind of bun?" "Oh, well, what do you have?" "Well, we have wheat, sesame, and sourdough." "Okay, give me wheat." "Do you want onions on that?" "Yes." "Lettuce and tomato?" "Yes." "Cheese?" "No." "Pickle?" "No." "Ketchup?" "Yes." "Mustard?" "No." Okay, you've got the point. I mean, you'd walk out in frustration after all of those questions. So what does the pro say in the restaurant business? Something like this. "Hi, what can I get you for lunch?" "Hamburger." "Great. The burgers are delicious, and they come on wheat, sesame, or sourdough buns. How do you want it cooked, and what kind of bun?" "Well, I want it well done on a wheat bun." "Well, what do you like on your burger?" "Lettuce, tomato, onions, and ketchup." "Great. We'll get busy on it right away. And by the way, what can I get you to drink?" Hey, that was 3 questions instead of 10. That's how to get a lot of information, with just a few questions. Now, here's what you can do. Write out a plan of action and become a qualifying expert. Compile a checklist of qualifying funnel questions based on the prospect qualities on your 10 to win list. Next, learn them. Learn them so well that you don't need to think about the next question while your prospect is answering the previous one. Ask permission to write down the information you receive. "Hey, would it be okay if I just jot a couple of notes down, Mrs. Prospect?" Usually nobody's offended that you care enough to write down what they say. You see, the amateurs don't do that, and they forget a lot of that vital information. Now, here's a question for you. Who earns big bucks? I mean, really big bucks, for just asking questions? Well, of course, great salespeople can. Trial lawyers do, especially when they have a hostile witness on the stand. But to me, the people that you can learn the most from are the great question askers on television. Now, here's an assignment. Study TV interviewers. The great old-time ones like Barbara Walters, Mike Wallace, and Larry King. The ones who have had the most famous of guests on this show. Your assignment is to focus on the questions they ask and then how well they listen to the responses. Now, I mentioned Mike Wallace because when he was in his 80s, he was still one of the most probing of interviewers. His style, go right for the nitty-gritty question. Put them on the spot. And boy, did he ever strike fear into the hearts of people who heard that Mike Wallace in 60 Minutes was outside their office door. Larry King's reputation as a great interviewer was gained years ago when his guest was Dr. Renee Richards, an optometrist and a former professional tennis player on the men's tour. Renee Richards had just announced publicly that he would undergo a sex change operation and become a woman. As millions of listeners tuned in to hear all the graphic details, master questioner Larry King began the interview this way. "Dr. Richards, tell us, what got you to pursue optometry as a profession?" Wow! What an amazing question to a prospect who was nervous, unsure, and quite a bit defensive. No one had ever asked him that question before. It brought forth a very revealing insight into the person who, except in the world of eye surgery, no one knew anything about as this world-famous eye doctor. For the rest of the interview, Dr. Richards remained relaxed and trusting of Larry King. Because of Larry's preparation and his desire to get the audience to know his guest as a person, not to just put on a sideshow, the sex change question was then discussed openly by a relaxed and very comfortable Dr. Richards. But in most people's opinions, one of the best question askers of all time was Barbara Walters. At the turn of the century, Barbara was earning over $10 million a year just to ask questions.
Her interviews of the great and the famous drew millions of TV viewers to her show. Insiders said of Barbara that she was so well prepared. She studied everything she could find out about the person she would be interviewing. And then she'd spend hour after hour writing down her questions, fine-tuning them, changing a word here and a phrase there until they were exactly the right questions and in the right order to ask them. Now, how about you doing what Barbara did? Prepare, prepare, prepare. Write and fine-tune. Now, one of her best techniques, unlike Mike Wallace's nitty-gritty questioning style, was to use what she called ask indirectly to get it directly. One example of this was when, years after Gerald Ford had left the White House as President of the United States, news leaked out that his wife, Betty, had a drinking problem. The listeners wanted to know the details and the extent of her addiction to alcohol. So what does Barbara Walters ask her? Mrs. Ford, what one misconception would you like to clear up about yourself? Oh, wow. What a brilliant question. And proof of Barbara Walters' skill as an interviewer. That question gave Mrs. Ford the opportunity to bring up her problem in her own way and also led to a discussion of her founding of the world-famous Betty Ford Clinic that has helped so many people conquer their addictions. You know, you can use that technique, too. When you're probing for information that could be personal or even confidential, use Barbara Walters' indirect approach. Then, of course, the decade of the 90s ended with 48.5 million Americans watching for 2 hours as Barbara, the great questioner Walters, interviewed Monica Lewinsky. Now, forget for a moment the scandalous details of the President Clinton-Monica Lewinsky affair. I mean, the interview was a masterpiece of skillful questioning and focused listening. If you can see a rerun of that interview, it's well worth the 2 hours just to study how effective her questions were. Now for a few more thoughts on listening. Again, why ask questions if you don't hear the information they give you? Questioning without listening is a waste of time and effort. So think of these few points. Look at the prospect as they respond. Eye contact helps you focus better and lets you maintain rapt attention. Then add in non-judgmental acknowledgments like, oh, I see, ooh, okay. These let your prospect know that you're listening and encourage him to keep talking. Then jot down notes, keywords, numbers, and facts, and you can say, wow, you know, that's an amazing number. Let me just jot that down. Or, you know, I don't want to forget that point. Is it okay if I just write it down? Make your questions appear almost casual and in a conversational manner. You know, that reminds me of another personal story. For the Millennium Christmas, our family decided to go to New York City. Six adults and our four-month-old grandson in the Big Apple for 5 wonderful days of sightseeing, shows, and excitement. And by the way, if you've never been to New York City at Christmas time, it's well worth the effort to go. On the last day, the guys and gals split up for the morning. So John and Steve, my two son-in-laws and I, took a little side trip from Midtown Manhattan, downtown, to see the New York Stock Exchange, the World Trade Center, and a few other places. After checking with the hotel bellman which subway we should take, we jump on and experience what millions of commuters experience every day, the New York City subway system. I get a seat, John and Steve stand nearby. And after a few minutes, I ask the man sitting next to me, dressed in a suit, reading the Wall Street Journal, and obviously a businessman, excuse me, could I ask you a question? Well, just quickly glancing up from his paper, he says, yeah. I said, do you know which way we go when we get off at the Wall Street station to go to the New York Stock Exchange? Yeah, it's just a couple of short blocks away. You just can't miss it. Thank you, I said. The three of us are from Arizona, pointing to John and Steve, and I just wanted to make sure the hotel bellman's directions were right. Oh, he says, where are you staying? I said, the Roosevelt Hotel. Oh, yeah, that's at 45th and Madison. Right, I said. Do you live in Manhattan? Oh, no, I live in Westchester County. Oh, what's it like up there, I said. Now, in the next 10 minutes, I knew his name. I knew he had 2 kids from his first marriage, 3 kids from his present marriage, who he worked for, what he thinks of the mayor of New York City, the president of the United States, what it's like living in Westchester, and almost his entire life story. Well, he gets off at the next stop and says goodbye. Well, I'm still sitting there, and the man across from me then says, hey, I heard you mention the New York Stock Exchange. Are you going there? Yes, Steve, John, and I are tourists, and we're going to see the exchange. Oh, he says, I'm a stockbroker. Work right down the street from it. I'll walk you over. Well, great, I said, hey, and thanks. Could I ask you a few questions about what else we ought to see downtown? Sure, he said. Off we went talking.
The discussion soon went to his job, and by the time we got off at the Wall Street station, I knew almost his entire life story, too. He was single, a runner, a workaholic. He told me who his brokerage clients were, what stocks he liked, how the online trading and discount brokers were impacting his industry, almost everything about him and his world. Well, like most every other New Yorker we met on that trip, this stockbroker was just so nice. He walked us right over to the ticket line for the 10 a.m. stock market tour and then said goodbye. As soon as he was out of sight, John and Steve burst out laughing. Well, I said, hey, what'd I miss, guys? Steve says to me, do you realize that from the time you sat down on that subway train till the time we got off at that Wall Street stop, you were the only one talking, you and those two guys. Not another conversation took place on that entire subway car. And then John says, yeah, and I can't believe the stuff those guys told you about themselves. Well, we all laughed again, and then I had to endure almost 10 more minutes of their teasing and mimicking me. Could I ask you a question? Excuse me, is it all right to ask you a personal question? Well, I mean, it was just so typical, they said, because wherever we'd go, I'd start talking to strangers, and I'd find out all kinds of stuff. You know, it's a skill I learned way back from selling and training others to think like a customer. I mean, how can you think like a customer if you don't know what the customer's thinking? Yes, it's a skill, but it's one that didn't come naturally. It's learned by practicing. So here's an idea on how you can make the principle of asking questions part of your specific selling inventory. Interview strangers. That's right. Interview strangers. Set up a situation to practice asking questions and do it without taking any special time. Sometime in the next 30 days, you're going to be waiting. Waiting in a checkout line in a store, sitting in a doctor or dentist's office, waiting at the airport, waiting for a delayed flight, or just waiting to get your hair cut. Now, here's your assignment. See how much information you can gather about a complete stranger. Now, of course, you have to be sincere in your approach, and you don't want to sound like you're an investigator for the FBI. You're just making small talk, casual conversation with a complete stranger. Remember, listening is the key to asking good questions. So decide now to practice. Because your questions are the answer. Now, let me give you a mini discussion situation. Go to a popular movie on a Friday or Saturday night. Get there early, so you have to wait in line before you can get in. Now, don't be first on line. Make sure that you have strangers in front of you and behind you. Start behind you first, since they're already facing you, and you just say casually something to break the ice, so you can judge their receptivity to talking to you. You can say something like this. Wow, looks like we picked a popular movie tonight. What have you heard about it? Now, their response will quickly tell you if they want to or are willing to talk. If you get something like, oh boy, my sister said she and her husband loved it, then you could follow up, oh, do you have a lot of family here in town? Oh, no, my sister's in Seattle. Then you would say, oh, you know, we were just there this past summer. We loved it. Where do you live now? Oh, we live over by, and now you're in. How long have you lived there? What do you like best about that area? What kind of work do you do? And by the time you get seated in the movie, rate yourself on your questioning skills. You know, it's a fun way to practice selling skills, and you might even make a new friend. The key to the question technique is the listening. Dozens of books have been written on the art of listening. But what it really takes is being interested in what the other person is saying and being willing to tune in and focus, focus, focus. Remember how we opened this session with the elephant salesman? How did that elephant salesman know the farmer needed an elephant for politics, for kids' rides, and for heavy work? He listened. He listened to what his prospect told him. Then he used that information. A salesperson who qualifies his prospect effectively is like an expert locksmith. He makes a key to fit the lock, and it opens the lock. You can do the same thing by asking questions. Then use the information you gain to provide the key that will unlock for you your prospect's needs and wants. Use a funnel presentation. Picture that funnel in your mind, wide at the top, narrow at the bottom. You take all that information and reduce it to a specific problem, which your product solves. Sell solutions. Selling is helping. And the truth is, the best closers are the best qualifiers. And the best qualifiers are the ones who ask the best questions. Listen to the answers and remember what they've heard. It's just like that old expression, an elephant never forgets, or he's got a memory like an elephant. Yes, it's true. Elephants have exceptional memories. And each herd is led by the matriarch, the ruling female elephant. She knows the migration routes, where to find the trees and fruit, how to find water even during the droughts. The entire herd depends on her memory. And experts have found that this memory comes from her keen senses and her ability to focus. Well, you have keen senses too. So focus them on your prospect and listen. Really listen, like an elephant.